Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the super fans.
But they are who we thought they were.
That's right. It is the Next Fan Up podcast, the Sunday show, which is why you'll be hearing not Pod Vader, but a whole new fresh group of super fans from different teams. We like to mix it up a little bit more on the Sunday show. And this time, you guys are going to be hosted by yours truly, Nick, the Kansas City Chiefs superfan. My team's not in the news quite as much this week, but there is one superfan here who has a lot to talk about, and that is Andy, our Dolphins superfan, who just got himself a new quarterback. How's it going, Andy?
It's going well. How are you guys tonight?
Doing just fine. The other guy on the line here is Greg, our Steelers superfan. How's it going, Greg?
Doing great. Excited to see Mr. Bearbutt himself back in the NFL.
Indeed. The NFL did definitely need another Bearbutt, I guess. And so, obviously, I mean, we need to jump into that right away. Bearbutt, Jay Cutler, is now a Miami Dolphin, signing a deal worth $10 million. It's five base salary, five in bonuses, and $3 million more in incentives in for just this year, for 2017. The Thursday crew talked a bit about you know Tannehill going down on Thursday. At the time, it was still pretty unclear what was what his medical fate would be, and honestly, it kind of still is. I mean, there's not a whole lot of very clear information coming out. There's conflicting reports about whether or not he's going to be gone for the year, whether or not this is something he could come back from mid-year. Honestly, it was starting to sound like the doctors here were like the Russian ambassador to the U.S. It was just like everybody had a different story about who was talking to who. But what we do know is that Miami is going to have one new quarterback, and that is Jay Cutler, the blasé man himself. And so, Andy, give us your thoughts. What are you feeling, man?
I mean, the past 72 hours have been an absolute whirlwind, and honestly, it feels like 10 minutes ago that I was taking a lunch break at work, talking to Pod Vader and all those guys on the Thursday podcast. By the way, the Thursday podcast was recorded literally like maybe 37 minutes after this news just broke. So my mental state when I was recording that was, understandably not what it could have been. Now, what do I think about Jay Cutler? That is the question. I think a number of things about Jay Cutler. I think that number one, the situation could definitely be a lot worse. I'm not totally convinced that Cutler's a huge downgrade from Tannehill. I think there are people out there who think that he's an upgrade. I'm not sure that's necessarily the case. I was talking to my brother earlier about this, and he said, this Dolphin team, you look at just the players we have on the 53-man roster. Well, now it's like a 95-man roster. They obviously haven't made any cutdowns yet, but the point is, we have more than enough talent on both offense and defense, and Jay Cutler is more than good enough where I'm not sure how materially the expectations should honestly be lessened. I think we can still definitely go 10-6 and make the playoffs, and depending on our first-round matchup, maybe win a playoff game. I mean, who knows? That said, Cutler can be completely disengaged, and we can go 5-11, and the bottom can fall out. I will say that I think 5-11, 6-10 is definitely our floor. This team just has way too much talent to go like 3-13 or something like that. But I also do think that the 11-5, 12-4 ceiling that I would argue we had with Tannehill, I'm not sure we have that with Cutler. And it's not even because Cutler is a worse quarterback. I think it's because Tannehill really would have hit his stride second year in this offense. But, I mean, we're never going to know. So, what do you guys think?
I think it's a great win-now move. I mean, you always want the veteran quarterback to come in and save the day at the end when your starter's down. And, Miami has a lot of things going for them. I mean, they have a really strong offensive line, really good running game. And, I mean, they have all the weapons in place that a facilitator of the offense could really get going. I mean,
and that's the thing, right? The weapons, right? I mean, Jarvis Landry, Devontae Parker, Kenny Stills, Jay Ajayi, I mean, that right there, I mean, goodness gracious. That's what I'm saying. The Dolphins should have more than enough. I mean, you've never really, both of you guys have had a lot of stability at the quarterback position for really some time now. So you can't.
Not the Chiefs, but.
Well, I mean, you have, though. I mean, relative to us.
I mean, I suppose so. We had the, you know, we had.
I mean, Trent Green gave you like 3 years in a row where he was good.
True. And then we had just an absolute deluge after he got too injured to play. And then we had Matt Castle for his one good year and then his two or three bad years. And then since then, Smith. So, I mean, I guess it's been longer periods of time, but, you know. Those would argue that we're in disarray now. I mean, what I find interesting about Jay Cutler, I mean, you know, there's been a ton of conversation about who, you know, who should be in the running for that job. Like, who should be the number one candidate, essentially? Of course, down, who should be there? And I think a lot of people would say Kaepernick first. And I don't know, I think I'd probably prefer Kaepernick overall than over Jay Cutler, just, you know, all things being equal. But the more I think about it, the more it really just makes sense. I mean, if you're Adam Gase, what you really want right now is a veteran who you definitely know you can trust to step in and run your offense and do the things you need to do. And you know, even if Kaepernick is slightly more talented, I think him and Cutler are roughly on the same level in terms of players. But if Kaepernick, let's just say for argument, is slightly more more talented than Cutler, you know, Cutler at least has knows Gase's system. I mean, those two guys have worked together. I mean, it's like bringing in a veteran, you know. And it's almost as if he's already been on the team in some extent, just in terms of the learning curve is not going to be there. And so in terms of finding an option that has like the least amount of variables that you can't control there, I mean, I think Cutler just makes sense for the guy you need to step in, you know, for whether it's half a season or a season. So there's that. And also, I mean, you look back at, I mean, it's not overblown. If you look at his year under Gase in 2015, when he was, you know, healthy the whole year, I mean, he still only played 15 games, but it was, you know, I mean, averaging 7.58 yards per attempt, 21 touchdowns, 11 interceptions, you know, quarterback rating of 92.3. Not bad. You know, obviously he wasn't great in 2016, but I don't know. I guess I'm curious what your thoughts are, you know, and it's sort of similar to like what this does to the quarterback situation, you know, more broadly in Miami, you know, given that you saw what happened, you know, Bradford comes in and now it's sort of weird and awkward between, you know, like what's going to happen with Bridgewater, with Bradford. Now, what's going to happen between Cutler and Tannehill?
Well, remember, it's slightly different because when the Vikings did what they had to do last year. Oh, and by the way, in my opinion, Bradford is significantly better quarterback than Bridgewater. Bradford had a sneaky good year last year. I think I talked about that earlier on the pod on Thursday. But the difference is, of course, is that when the Vikings did what they had to do, they had to trade, remember, for Bradford and his contract, whereas we're just signing Cutler. This is a one-year deal. So going forward, it is a slightly different situation. And I will say that I do have to disagree with you about Colin Kaepernick being better than Cutler. I think Cutler is a better quarterback than Kaepernick. I think he's significantly better, especially from inside the pocket, which is, frankly, where it starts and ends, let's be honest. The running stuff is cute, but it's just very unsustainable. Even the guys that do it well, like Cam, you know, how good is Cam actually? You know what I mean? I mean, that's a debate that we can have at different times. But, you know, I think Kaepernick would have been a better fit for a team that didn't have as much offensive weapons and talent around it. I think if you have a team that didn't have Devontae Parker, Jarvis Landry, et cetera, then Kaepernick would be great because Kaepernick with his legs can manufacture offense by himself. The Dolphins do not need their quarterback to manufacture offense by himself. The Dolphins need their quarterback to be good from the pocket so he can get the ball to the playmakers. Now, to be good from the pocket and get the ball to the playmakers, I'm not talking about the wow plays that you made with your legs, the 40-yard gains that Kaepernick can rip off. I mean, from that perspective, does that kind of change your mind, or do you still think Kaepernick would have been a more sensible fit?
I don't know. I mean, I still think overall he did better with less in San Francisco last year than Cutler did in Chicago overall over the last few years. And I think, you know, a healthy Absolutely. Kaepernick is probably better than a healthy Cutler.
I agree that Kaepernick did better with less, but that you're kind of playing into my point. My point is the Dolphins don't have less. The Dolphins have a lot. And if you have a lot on the outside, you need a guy to win from inside the pocket and get the ball to them. That's just what I think. As far as where the quarterback situation goes going forward. It's scary to think, because I don't think Cutler is the Dolphins quarterback in 2018. Or let's put it this way. If Jay Cutler is the Dolphins quarterback opening day 2018, that means something very good happened. I think we can all agree on that. That means the Dolphins went 11-5 and the dude threw 36 touchdowns. That's not going to happen, I don't think. And Tannehill, as of opening day next year, September whatever, 2018, Tannehill will be 30. So I don't know. I wouldn't be opposed to drafting a quarterback high this year. The problem is that we're not going to pick high enough, because this team, as I said, is way too talented to just go 3-13 and be able to get a quarterback like that. I mean, at our very worst, we're going to be 6-10 with like the 11th overall pick. So it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough to get a quarterback. Where do you guys, as outsiders, where do you guys see it headed, potentially, of course?
So I like this move a lot for them. And also, just backtracking a little bit here, I do think Cutler's a better fit than Kaepernick, only because now in Gase's playbook with Cutler instead of Tannehill, what does he have to remove from the playbook? And I think almost play selection-wise is almost nothing, because I think Cutler can make every
Tannehill
throw.
Is significantly more mobile than Cutler, but Tannehill was about to wear the knee brace all season, so that's something to consider. You're right. Yeah.
So that's how I view it. As of expectations for the Dolphins, you know, I mean, it's been a long time since I've had, you know, I haven't had a franchise quarterback, like you said earlier, but I do remember the days of Mike Tomczak and Cordell Stewart, and it was a lot of fun to go 10-6, 9-7, and squeak into the playoffs, and maybe not have a chance to win a title with those type of guys. But I'm seeing a lot of things on Twitter today about that this is a mistake because they're going to go for a draft pick. And, you know, their draft picks are going to be awful now because they're going to be in the middle of the round instead of the top of the round. I mean, who cares? Like, you know, I love the move because it's win now, and the fan base should love it too.
And just to give another angle on this, I'm kind of curious. I mean, as a Kenny Stills owner in fantasy myself, what do you think in terms
already?
Of
that? That's early.
No, this is our next fan up dynasty. I've had Stills for a year now. I'm kind of curious. I mean, you know, I think there was a lot of expectations on different guys going into this season, you know, and I think a lot of those expectations were based on who Tannehill sort of favored. Cutler's style isn't super different, but I mean, you would think he's going to hit some more deep routes than usual. I mean, I've seen some commentators suggesting that Devontae Parker is going to be, you know, the guy who's really fits the perfect pairing with Jay Cutler. I mean, have you thought about that? I mean, what do you think in terms of how this affects certain players and their own usage and their own production this year?
Yeah, I have thought about that. And, you know, Tannehill and Cutler stylistically are similar. Cutler has a better arm, but Tannehill has, an above average arm as well. And Tannehill's a lot more mobile. So to your point about the playbook not changing, I would 92-93% agree with that. The 7% that I would disagree is obviously with the design runs. Tannehill last year in his 12 games, just off the top of my head, we probably had maybe at least 30-ish design runs for him over those 12 games. And that's a decent, I mean, that's, you know, 2.5 per game. And that's about what we did with him. We're not going to do that with Cutler. I can assure you of that. But that's really the only way materially that the playbook changes. As far as the usage changing, I am very interested to see what happens with Jarvis Landry. Tannehill, early in his career, was notorious for, you know, dink and dunk guy who couldn't complete the parabolic deep ball down the sideline. Well, Tannehill has become one of the best, and, you know, don't adjust your podcast. He's one of the best deep ball throwers in the NFL, or at least he has been since the start of the 2015 season. You can look that up on any advanced metric site you want. He's actually been incredible. So I think, you know, and Cutler's a very good deep ball thrower too. So I think Stills doesn't really move the needle. I think that Stills' production would have been similar under both of them. I think Devontae Parker's a guy that was supposed to break out under both of them. I do think Landry could see a step back in targets. Tannehill and Jarvis's connection was just, I mean, you know, I would say they have great chemistry, but the fact of the matter is Jarvis is such a quarterback-friendly receiver, and the routes that he runs are so incredibly short and close to the line of scrimmage, and his hands are just so good that it's not hard to develop chemistry with Jarvis Landry. But when you take into account the supposed emergence of Devontae Parker, plus the fact that Jarvis is, he's being a good team player, he's not holding out, but he's disgruntled about his contract situation right now. He's certainly, certainly disgruntled. He's seen Rashad Jones, Kiko Alonso, Andre Branch, a lot of people get money before him, and he's done a lot more for the franchise than any of those guys have. So he's disgruntled right now. If he sees a step back in targets, I could see him walking and this year and in the near term not being as big a part of the offense. And when I say not being as big, what I really mean is he'll catch 85 balls for 911 yards and 3 touchdowns instead of 104 balls for 1,100 yards and 6 touchdowns. But I could see a step back in Jarvis's targets just because him and Tannehill just loved each other.
So I got a follow-up for that. If Landry's targets do fall, do you think it's at the mercy of Julius Thomas? Since, you know, Cutler in his history has had, like, Martellus Bennett and Tony Scheffler as his tight ends. He seems to like them enough. You know, I was just wondering if they would transfer from the, you know, slot receiver to the tight end.
Hear this now. Listen to this. Write this down. I'm declaring it right now. Julius Thomas will probably, will definitely catch fewer than 30 passes for fewer than 500 yards as a Miami Dolphin. I think Julius Thomas is a basketball-playing fraud who caught, like, 15 touchdowns caught, like, 29 touchdowns over 2 years or whatever it was with arguably the best quarterback in history. You look at Julius Thomas's numbers in Denver, his numbers aren't even that good. Granted, he's sharing targets with Wes Welker, Emmanuel, Demaryius, et cetera. Julius Thomas, his typical, those 2 years in Denver, his stat line was basically like 45 catches for like 600 yards. Oh, but by the way, 15 out of those 45 friggin' catches became touchdowns. That's unsustainable. Julius Thomas is not a good football player. He's going to catch fewer than 30 passes this year. Anthony Fasano, my former Finn, lo and behold, he's here again. Nick, you know all about Anthony Fasano. He was on the Chiefs.
Love Anthony Fasano.
Anthony Fasano's a great soldier, isn't he? I mean, he has limitations, but Anthony Fasano's a solid football player. There's a reason that the man's going on his 11th season. Anthony Fasano might out-snap Julius Thomas. So to answer your question about the tight end, that is something that I was worried about last year. Jordan Cameron was a huge bum. Deion Sims is fine. He filled in fine, but he's not good either, really. Fasano's not good, but he's reliable. He's a good soldier. Julius Thomas is not good. It's going to be interesting to see what the Dolphins do at tight end. I'm just very excited for March 2018 when the Bills inevitably cut Charles Clay. Charles Clay loves it in Miami. He still lives down here in the offseason. We're just going to resign him. Frankly, we haven't replaced Charles Clay. He had 2 fantastic seasons for us in a row. We haven't replaced him since. So not really high hopes for JT or anyone in the tight end room this year, I'm sorry to say.
Yeah, some pretty cool and bold predictions there. We're definitely going to have to jot some of these down here. But I also wanted to give him one other perspective here. I mean, we were hoping to be joined by a Jay fan. He's not going to be able to make it. He sent me a couple of notes, which I think are both interesting conversation points. One, because, you know, Cutler was a guy who's been out there on the market essentially for a while. He signed that broadcasting deal, but it was pretty, I mean, I don't know, it seemed like pretty clear that he, you know, he was still a guy. He's 34, but that's not old necessarily for quarterback these days. I mean, he definitely had a few more productive years in him, and if somebody, you know, came knocking, he probably could have jumped back into the game. A little miss that the Texans didn't make a harder try to get Cutler on their team. He said Texans clearly had no offseason plan to, quote, get rid of Brock. If that's what Cutler ended up going for, the Texans could have easily afforded it with their $30 million in cap space. His other point here is sort of interesting. He sort of aggregated and compared the stat of Matt Moore versus Cutler and said they essentially have the same stats. It's about a 60% completion rate and a ratio overall of throughout their career, their yards per attempt and average yards per attempt are about the same. So, I mean, Matt Moore's a guy we never mentioned in all of this, and I think I saw a lot of Dolphins fans sort of saying that, like this Matt Moore's big and he's a solid backup. What are your thoughts on that angle there, Andy?
Matt Moore is better than a number of starters in the NFL, and that's actually my fault more than anything for not bringing up Matt Moore so far. Initially, when Tannehill went down, my thoughts were this. Cutler, I wouldn't mind Cutler. I wouldn't mind Kaepernick. And by the way, like, let's say the situation was reversed and we signed Kaepernick instead of Cutler. I wouldn't have loved the move, but I wouldn't have hated it either by any means, just for the record. I definitely wouldn't have hated signing Kaepernick. Matt Moore, initially, I thought was the best out of the three options. The thing is, though, is that the whole argument that Matt Moore knows the playbook better is kind of moot because Cutler knows the playbook just as well. If anything, Cutler played 15 games with the playbook. Matt Moore played only four. But, you know, Frat Moore is absolutely good enough to start in the NFL. He's better than a number of starting quarterbacks. He's better than Bortles. Definitely, you can take that to your grave. He is a better quarterback than Blake Bortles. He is a better quarterback than Jared Goff, absolutely. He's better than Fitzpatrick, who started last year. Matt Moore can start. And if you extrapolate Matt Moore's career numbers over whatever number of starts, he's actually, like, pretty close to a league-average quarterback. It's insane that he has never gotten the chance. Matt Moore has just never gotten the chance when every single time he has gotten put in because of either the Jake Delhomme injury in Carolina. Look up Matt Moore's numbers in 2009. He was fantastic. He went 4-2. He had a 95 pass rating. And this is back in 2009. This is before everyone had a 95 pass rating. You know, he was really good for us in 2011 when Chad Henne got hurt. He was incredible for us last year. Go and look at Matt Moore's numbers last year. He had a pass rating of 105. Granted, that was inflated by a 4-touchdown performance the week before Christmas against the Jets, the pitiful Jets, on Saturday night. Matt Moore is an elite backup quarterback. Other than Jimmy Garoppolo, some people say Drew Stanton, and that's fine. But other than Jimmy Garoppolo, I don't think there's a better backup quarterback in the NFL than Matt Moore. You have a decent one, Greg. Landry Jones is decent, but I think Matt Moore is arguably the best non-Garoppolo backup in the NFL. And it's my fault that we haven't talked about him until now. But listen, in Gase I trust. Adam Gase knows Matt Moore better than anyone else, and there's a reason Adam Gase went out to sign Jay Cutler. It's because he thinks he's better, and he probably is. Cutler probably is better than Matt Moore, even though that's a great point you brought up about their numbers being similar, because Moore is more than competent.
Interesting. We're going to move now to the Hall of Fame. The Hall of Fame inductions were the last few days, and we had some speeches. You know, I'll be honest, it's something I typically, you know, really tune into. Greg, I know you caught bits of this as well. You know, other than, you know, Morton Anderson's hair, what during this year's induction?
Well, the speeches in general were all very well done, and there was even some, like, politically charged speeches with the safety from the Seahawks. His name is escaping me, but overall, I thought the speeches this year were a little bit dry compared to Brett Favre's last year. I mean, Jason Taylor, a Pittsburgh boy, you know, a Dolphin, he went in this year. I was excited for him, and I was excited for Kurt Warner. I mean, he had a good speech, but there was nothing that compared to the class, or not the class, but the cachet that Favre had last year. I mean, Favre's speech last year kind of left all these guys, at least in my mind, dropped down a little bit. I mean, Jerry Jones seemed to ramble for about 30 minutes talking about everybody under the sun. So he brought up Jay Novacek about like 14 times in his speech. So they were okay. But if you guys missed them, I wouldn't have YouTubed them or anything to try to catch up.
I will say the other like great moment that I saw that came out of that, you know, a whole bunch of Cowboys former players ribbing Jerry Jones, who quite a bit of ribbing. Was Taylor exactly pointing to Snyder, the owner of the Washington Redskins, and saying like, "Yep, I stole a bunch of money. Thanks for that from you." Because I remember I was studying in D.C. during his short tenure at the Washington Redskins, and the ridiculous contract he from them for doing almost nothing. But I know Andy, you remembered Taylor for much more successful times.
Yeah, Jason Taylor was unbelievable. I mean, he played defensive end at 245 pounds soaking wet. I mean, he was an unbelievable athlete. You know, he has the most defensive touchdowns by a defensive lineman ever, defensive player of the year in 2006, 139 career sacks. Well, one thing I will say, actually, I do think in terms of pure pass rushing ability, I think Cameron Wake, in my opinion as a Dolphins fan who watches every game, every snap, every game, I think Cameron Wake is actually a better pure pass rusher than Jason Taylor. But the thing is, Jason Taylor did so many other things. Cameron Wake is nearly invisible against the run. Jason Taylor was unbelievable against the run. He had, I think, maybe 15 or 16 career interceptions as a pass rusher, basically. He was, you know, he won Defensive Player of the Year. This, you know what I think the most important or most impressive thing about Cobra is that he was drafted as a safety. He played safety for a little bit at Akron. That's how small he was. He was drafted as a safety. He bulked up, then became a 4-3 pass rusher in the late 90s, early 2000s. And then under Saban, Nick Saban, as everyone knows, runs a 3-4. So when Saban got to Miami, he said, hey, listen, Jason, you're going to be standing up and covering people now. We understand that you've already made the Pro Bowl like four times as a 4-3 edge rusher. We want you to stand up and cover people. Is that okay? Jason's like, yeah, that's okay. I'll just win Defensive Player of the friggin' year, which is what he did in 2006. Now, remember, that was the year Merriman won it. Sean Merriman won it, but then he got popped for PED, so they gave it to Cobra. So officially, Jason Taylor won it that year. I mean, the guy was just incredible. He was just absolutely incredible. And also, I do think it was a class act by Brady. Brady wrote, like, personally wrote a letter to the Hall of Fame. I mean, not that, I mean, he was going to get in anyway, but Brady wrote a note to the Hall of Fame committee saying, hey, listen, this guy's incredible. He's tenacious, you know, blah, blah, blah. I thought that was really cool, really classy.
Speaking of Brady, I will say one man who does. Taylor was not able to do is Bernard Pollard, because man, been able to really totally stymie the Patriots through the years, and that man should be.
Yeah, Bernard Pollard hit Brady's knee that one time. He also was the one that hurt Welker, I believe. Yeah, and yeah. that's actually a Patriot season that people often forget. The Ravens dropping it, or the Ravens beat him twice. But the Raven drubbing at home in 2009, that was a very underwhelming Patriot team. I think they were like 10-6 that year. But anyway, yeah, I didn't see any of the Hall of Fame. I'm obviously going to YouTube Cobra's speech and watch that. But yeah, now we just got to get Zach Thomas in. That's all we got to do now.
Side note on Pollard. I mean, it's just one of the like crazy, just like football fate sort of things. You know, Pollard was a safety for the Chiefs. He, in Brady's knees, I think in Arrowhead, so knocked Brady out for the year. Pollard then was a surprise cut the year after that. But on the Patriots, Matt Cassel emerged as the replacement for Tom Brady all year. The team went 10-6, missed the playoffs. They traded Matt Cassel to the Chiefs and gave us one bad season, then one good season, then two or three more bad seasons. And the Chiefs paid him an ungodly amount of money before he played a snap for us. And so Bernard Pollard, man, that guy is like the fate changer of teams. But again, total side note, we need to move on. And, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of news that the Thursday crew didn't cover. I mean, one thing that just sort of came up is, you know, for the Falcons, they've had some struggles in the secondary. And, you know, they have some young, interesting guys there. They have Keanu Neal, et cetera. But, you know, but Jalen Collins, their second round pick in 2015, who had a whole bunch of drug, you know, penalties and suspensions leading into his tenure in the NFL. For the first four games of last year for violating the PED policy, and he's now going to be suspended for games this year for violating PEDs. So all that conversation and draft about red flags that seems to go ad nauseum.
Yeah, I mean, that stuff counts. Definitely counts, as we know. You know, I think it's so funny how every single draft season, people say the same thing. The apologists for these kids, they say this. It's always something to the tune of, oh, they're young. What were you like when you were 20? What were you doing? Blah, 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 blah. And then lo and behold, you know, fast forward 5 years later, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire. If it looks like a duck, it walks like a duck, it just might very well be a duck. And a lot of these kids who get in trouble on campus, they just get in trouble in the NFL. And Jalen Collins, clock is already ticking for him. 2015 high pick, so they invested a lot in you. A lot is expected. Missed time last year. He was okay last year when he played. I actually watched a couple games where he was good. And this year he's going to miss what, 10 games? Clock is already ticking for him. So he better straighten himself out, and maybe he will. There are a lot of players do straighten themselves out. Brandon Marshall, I think, is one of the best examples of that. So we'll see what happens, but not looking good so far.
But you know, it's a good thing the Falcons are not their defense giving giant leads in important games or anything, so they should be fine. So actually, I got ahead of my notes. The one thing when we're discussing the Hall of Fame is really just, you know, who we think at this very early stage really needs to come into the consideration forward. You know, Greg, you shared this great list of some really notable names in the conversation going into next year. I have my five out of those that I think need, but you disagree on at least a few of them. Mine are, I mean, I think it's absurd that T.O. is not in the Hall of Fame yet. I get that he's annoying. He annoyed me throughout most of his career. He continues to annoy me, but the dude needs to be in the Hall of Fame. Ray Lewis, sort of similar. I understand his baggage. I mean, it's just sort of unavoidable. I mean, he's got to go in at some point. It's going to be the asterisk. And for my money, I want to see Randy Moss, Brian Dawkins, who was my favorite, basically the player that made me love Andy Reid when I was Buddy Youngin, long before Andy Reid was wearing red, and Brian Urlacher. Got a lot of family up in Chicago, and old school middle linebackers. But who do you guys think? I mean, I'll you, Greg, first, because you got this ball rolling with this great list. I mean, who do you think really should be in there?
So I don't mind some of your picks, but I do like Randy Moss, and this is his first year of eligibility. I do think T.O. has to go in. I mean, both those guys have 100 receiving touchdowns in their career. I mean, that's just amazing. So I think both those guys are in. I think this is Ray Lewis's and Urlacher's first years of eligibility. I think Ray Lewis has to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. I mean, I hated the guy for years. He's always upset me every time he gave Hines Ward a concussion or hit, you know, broke Rashard Mendenhall's shoulder or whatever he did. So he's automatically in for me. Urlacher, I'm sorry. I didn't think he was on the same level at all as Ray Lewis. So I don't have him in mind.
Yeah, no way. Not even close.
Especially first ballot, you know, that's no way. So I'm back to Steve Hutchinson's first year of eligibility, and I have it between him and Alan Faneca, both of the best guards of the early 2000s. You know, take either one of those guys. That's fine with me. And then I'm going to go with a Patriot, unfortunately. Richard Sherman, I hear how great he was. I always saw him make plays on the field. I don't know why a 3-4 defensive end can't get some love.
What about you, Andy?
Tough to say. I mean, that first of all, Brian Urlacher, I do think, is a Hall of Famer. You guys would agree with that. I just don't think he's anywhere near Ray Lewis.
Agreed.
Okay, can't go in before Ray.
Yeah. So, but Urlacher should get in. I think Randy Moss should get in first ballot. Ray should get in first ballot. I've always loved Ray Lewis. Well, Hutchinson and Faneca both should be in eventually. Not sure who should be in before the other. I mean, Faneca, I thought Faneca was very impressive late in his career. I mean, he on the Rex Ryan teams, at least the first Rex Ryan team in 2009, I'm pretty sure Faneca at like age 36 was a first team all pro at guard. Remember that was the Rex team that led the league in rushing, number one in rushing in the NFL. I think, Dawkins, I never really saw much of Dawkins. From all I've heard, you know, he's very good. I guess he could be in. Seems like a Zach Thomas type of guy where it's like the Hall of Very Good, but we're not sure if you're a Hall of Famer. They seem to be in the same kind of class. Who are some other names that you guys just mentioned really quickly?
Well, there's there's Steve Atwater, Brian Dawkins, John Lynch, Jeff Saturday, Kevin Mawai, Matt Burke, Isaac Bruce, Priest Holmes, and I said Richard Seymour. I think that's pretty much the list.
There's someone who gave a shout out to Joe Jacoby, but
I guess I'll just start off. So on that list, obviously all great football players, and I'll just mention the players that I don't think should be in under any circumstances, and then everyone else I think should be in at some point. So I don't think Richard Seymour should be a Hall of Famer. I just don't think he was good enough to be a Hall of Famer. I just don't think he's good enough. Definitely don't think Priest Holmes should be a Hall of Famer. There's only room for so many archetypes of the running back. And listen, all running backs have short shelf lives. All running backs have short primes. We get that. Not everyone's Adrian Peterson. We understand that. But, you know, the Hall of Fame only has room for so many archetypes of the running back who had, like, only, like, 3 good years, but the 3 years were phenomenal. They already have one of those. His name is Terrell Davis. And Davis had 4 good years. And Priest Holmes, if my memory serves me, and I'm not sure about this, but I am a 90s kid. So if my memory serves me, I do think Priest Holmes was undrafted, which is great. It's a great story, obviously. But I do think he had only 2 or 3 good years, as opposed to, you know, Ricky's 5 good years or Terrell Davis's 4 good years. I think Priest Holmes actually sat behind Jamal Lewis on the Ravens bench. Priest Holmes, by the way, has a Super Bowl ring because he was on that 2000 team. That I'm positive of. But his career didn't get, Priest Holmes didn't get regular carries until his, like, age 25-ish, 26 season, because the first couple of years he was behind Jamal Lewis on that team. But, yeah, I don't think Priest Holmes should make it. I don't think necessarily Steve Atwater should make it. I don't think Richard Seymour should make it. Who else on that list? I mean, that's really all I have. I think the Hall of Fame is something that should retain its selectivity. And again, as you guys know, I'm a huge Zach Thomas guy. But hey, if someone were to look me in the eye and say, hey, Zach Thomas isn't good enough to be a Hall of Famer, I get it. I don't necessarily agree, but I get it. And those are the tough decisions, the Zach Thomas, Steve Atwater, Brian Dawkins types of decisions. Isaac Bruce is another Isaac Bruce type of decision that you have to make. And it's tough. No, not everyone's going to go home happy.
I will say, just as the Chiefs super fan, it sort of in defense of Priest, I mean, I think I hear you on all those points, and he's the sort of guy I just believe, I kind of agree. I mean, I think he's got to be sort of borderline. I think I'd be happy with him getting in at some point, certainly not first ballot. I mean, maybe 5-10 years from now or something like that, and maybe a little watered down class or something like that. Because, yeah, I mean, you are right. I mean, basically had 3 amazing seasons. And a career that could have been.
Can I ask you a question about Priest Holmes point blank? Point blank right now. Are you ready for this question? It's about the Rock Your World. Why is it that Priest Holmes got hurt and his immediate successor, Larry Johnson, went on to have 2.5 seasons of fantasy goodness that pretty much rivaled Priest? Maybe not as a pass catcher. But what does that say about Priest Holmes? We all know that Kansas City offensive line, Willie Rofe, I mean, Willie Shields, Rofe, those guys back then. I mean, how many Hall of Famers are on that early 2000s Chiefs offensive line? They're the ones who should be in the Hall of Fame. What does it say about Priest Holmes that when he went down, Larry Johnson came in right after him and was pretty much as good? What does that say about him? Larry Johnson's not a Hall of Famer, exactly.
Anyone ever be. I think it's a very fair point. And to your point, I mean, I think 2 or 3 of those guys are already in the Hall in terms of that offensive line. But, you know, the thing is with Priest is that, like, yes, he was running behind, you know, maybe the best offensive line of that decade. And yeah, Larry Johnson was also really good. I mean, he didn't have, but the thing is, I mean, if you just watch the two of those guys, there was clear that Priest had a sort of magic that if he had gotten injured, he would have had a good decade of just ridiculousness, because he had the power and he also just had ridiculous speed. He would also jump like 10 yards. I mean, the signature play for Priest Holmes.
I do remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. Him looking like Superman, just like jumping from like the 5-yard line and like landing somewhere in the middle of the end zone over, you know, this like these giant brawls going on at the goal line. And so, I mean, there's certain things that there's like, it was obvious he was like physically just, you know, on another level. And there's also some crazy play I remember when I was a kid where it looked like something out of like the Matrix, where he like, you know, opposing player to like, you know, to jump an extra, you know, 5 yards into the end zone. I mean, he was a phenomenal player for his time. And I think, yeah, I mean, it's true. I mean, there's a lot of, I mean, I guess to me, I would have always said that he was borderline but not in until Terrell Davis got in. And so like, I can live with Priest Holmes.
As a Niners kid, can I give you a name I like a lot better than Priest Holmes for the Hall of Fame? Just a lot better. Similar, and it's a good comp, too, by the way. Edgerrin James, the Edge. And you can give me all the Peyton Manning qualifications you want. Those early 2000s Colts teams had a lot more balance than people remember. Edge had a couple seasons where he rushed for 60, or one season where he rushed for 1600 yards. I believe it was 2004. But Peyton would have been great no matter what was around him back then. He would have been great no matter what. He didn't need Marvin. He didn't need Reggie. Didn't need Dallas Clark. Didn't need Edge. But I think in the late 90s, early 2000s, having Edgerrin James really helped his career, and Brady never had a guy like that. You know, just saying.
Well, I will say the one thing in favor of Priest, and I give him this credit because I think it is a lot of value in any non-quarterback that wins the MVP. You know, that he did do that, so I give him a nod just that way. If you're going to let the short era guys in, then I think Priest has to be considered at least. What's that?
Was that 2003, the MVP year? That was the 13-3 team, was it not? Chiefs, the 2003 team?
I believe it might have been, so,
yeah. He had like 27 touchdowns.
Who did you guys lose to in the playoffs that year? Did you lose to the Raiders?
I think that was That was the year when we played the Colts in like the wild card round, and it was the game where there was zero points.
They scrubbed you. Yeah. I remember that.
Yeah, there were no points in that game because the Chiefs had no offense, or no defense, rather, at the time. We had like I don't know, I think we were like top three offense, zero defense. We've been the opposite for a long time since. But yeah, no punts in that game, and the Colts got the ball last. So that's what happened. But all right. Well, I mean, look, Hall of Fame is always a fun topic because we can debate these guys up and down. But there's a lot of interesting guys that are now coming into eligibility, and there's a lot more fun conversations to have. But we have football right in front of us, actually, as well. And so because the Thursday crew, they're going to be probably, you know, given a few thoughts on all of the games that are right around the corner. Preseason games, but there is still technically football, and there are still technically things to watch during them. There is one game, however, that's going to happen before they get a chance to talk about it, and that is the Wednesday game between the Steelers. Going to go around the horn and to say, you know, we can talk about like the one thing that, you know, might be worth watching out of that. I mean, the obvious and easy one, I think, would be the Texans quarterback situation. But I honestly, well, if the Panthers end up playing any of their starters, and if they run a series of their starting offense, I think the Panthers and their transition into this Cam Newton protecting scheme with a lot of short and intermediate passes and the kind of guys that are threatening with short slants and you know, And bubble screens in space with McCaffrey and Curtis Samuels. I think it's going to be really interesting. I'm honestly fascinated to see if it works. I don't think it will, but those are two guys that I had my eye on all through the draft season, so I'm curious how that offense rolls out. But Greg, what are you going to be looking for in this game?
Well, you stole the most interesting thing, so that's a bad host right there, that you can't steal the most interesting topic. But I mean, I'll be watching the Texans quarterback battle, and I'll be rooting for Savage to come out on top. But I mean, we're not going to see anything of real significance there. I mean, hopefully for my fantasy team, I hope that DeAndre Hopkins looks like he has good rapport with both quarterbacks if he gets to play that much.
And yeah, you, Andy, quarterback battle. Anything of interest in this? Yeah.
I mean, the quarterback battle on the Houston side is obviously what everyone's going to be looking out for. I would understand Savage is from Pitt, so that's obviously why you're rooting for him. I just put that together in my head. Deshaun Watson, I'm rooting for Deshaun Watson too, though. I mean, I think that'll be interesting. DeAndre Hopkins is probably going to play maybe five snaps in this game. I'm not sure I'm looking for very much from him. Same with Lamar. Now, is Cam playing this game, guys? I don't think he is, right?
No, he's having a rest right now with that shoulder, I think.
Yeah, he's out for a while. Yeah, so, Cam is going to be out for a while. And to your guys' point about the shift in offense and the short passes, timing passes, bubble screens, slants, you know, you guys know, I for a long time, you know, I've just never thought Cam was that good a quarterback. I don't think he's a bad quarterback by any means. I think Cam is a legitimate franchise quarterback, but Cam Newton is – he's at that level of quarterbacking where he's about as bad as you can possibly be, in my humble opinion, and still be considered a franchise quarterback. He is that lower bound. To some people, that lower bound is Kirk Cousins. To some people, it's Matthew Stafford. For me, it's Cam Newton. I think he's that lower bound of franchise quarterbacking. And this idea that we're just going to pump up his completion percentage with easy throws, short throws don't mean easy throws. And if you're Cam Newton and you're throwing off your back foot every single time, you can't ground ball these slants. You have to throw these slants on time. You have to throw them on the receiver's chest. You have to throw them in stride. That's just Cam Newton has just never, ever been a rhythm passer like that. He's just not accurate. Cam Newton's at his best when he's out of the pocket, making things happen. He's at his best when he's, you know, slightly off platform, throwing that deep dig, just that pure arm strength in breaking route up the seam. That's where he's at his best. He's not at his best when he has to throw in rhythm on time accurately. It's just not who he is. Now, I think Christian McCaffrey's pretty good, and I think I like their weapons more than most other people do, so I'm willing to keep an open mind. If Cam Newton has, you know, I think 2015 is the best he's ever going to look, but if he's 85% as good as he was in 2015 this coming year and the Panthers go 11-5, I'm not sure I'd necessarily be shocked, but I'm not expecting that to happen either. But it will be interesting. It will be interesting. Not that he's playing this game, though.
One additional item that just came to my mind was, will J.J. Watt even get a snap? I mean, I hear he's healthy, so that's kind of exciting for Texans fans.
Yeah, will he even put on pads, or would that risk straining his back? I don't know. Well, obviously the Thursday crew is going to tackle our games as well, but, you know, we are the super fans. We've been watching our own camps and all of those, misleading and mostly garbage camp reports, but we gobble them up anyway. So I'm curious also what you guys are going to be looking for in your own games for your own. What are the camp battles? What's sort of like the one big guy you're looking at, or the one big position group you're looking to shake out? And I'll toss it to you, Greg, first.
Well, the wide receiver group for the Steelers is very deep this year. We're still in limbo here with Martavis Bryant. For some reason, the league will not reinstate him. You hear the Steelers say that he's done everything that he needs to do, and that you hear the league say, no, he hasn't. So there's some type of technical difficulty they're having there. I don't know exactly what it is. The speculation is that at training camp, he doesn't have a therapist to see daily, so that might be why he's not allowed to participate in practice. So I'm watching that very closely. But also, the star of the camp in Steeler land here is Justin Hunter. For some reason, they signed him, and he's balling out. He has scored like 80% of the touchdowns in camp so far, and everyone's losing their mind over Justin Hunter. But the Steelers have legitimately seven quality wide receivers plus Justin Hunter. So it'll be interesting to see who shakes out, because I can't see them keeping six. So I'll be watching the entire receiving group, DeMarcus Ayers, Sammy Coates, if he suits up. AB won't play, but there's Juju Smith-Schuster to watch. So there's a lot to go around just the wide receiver group, and hopefully the quarterbacking with Josh Dobbs will do enough in this first game to let us see something of their talent.
Interesting. And I bet every other team is going to be watching your guys' way. But so on to you, Andy. I mean, doesn't look like Cutler's going to put on any pads this early for a game at the end of the week. But what are the other things that have been interesting so far in Dolphins camp?
Yeah, so we've obviously beaten the Cutler thing to death, so we're not going to, rehash that. I think there's two positional battles, both on defense, and I'll throw in a third. The third one would be guard on offense. But number one, the defensive tackle spot across or alongside Sue. Jordan Phillips has flashed. I mean, Jordan Phillips, he I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with the clip, but anytime a 330-pound man is running with the football, it's a pretty funny thing. Jordan Phillips dropped back in the coverage last year and picked off Ryan Fitzpatrick, which was a phenomenal play. he recovered two fumbles. He had like four pass deflections. He had like two pass deflections on back-to-back plays, by the way, Greg, when we beat you in October. Not that you probably remember those, but I mean, Jordan Phillips has flashed all the time, and right now he's second team behind Devin Gotcho or Gaucho, not even sure how to pronounce that. It's E-A-U-X, like the French quarter spelling. I think that's just a, you know, if you guys remember, Adam Gase benched Jay Ajayi opening week last week. Jay Ajayi did not make the trip out of Seattle. That obviously motivated him. He had an all-pro type season. I think Gase is doing the same thing with Jordan Phillips right now. I think he's trying to motivate him by benching him because he's incredibly talented. And the second one on defense is middle linebacker Raekwon McMillan, our second-round pick out of Ohio State, super athletic kid. He's apparently already won the job. Now, everything that I'm fortunate enough where the Miami Dolphin beat writers, both Omar Kelly of the Sun Sentinel and Armando Salguero of the Miami Herald, they both tweet pretty much live tweet play-by-play at training camp. Not all beat writers do that. And anytime they never mention Raekwon McMillan making any plays. And normally, when as a linebacker, you want your name to be mentioned, unless they're just throwing at you in coverage. So I'm worried that the Dolphins are kind of just handing him the starting job just because he was a second-round pick. It's exactly what we did with Jonathan Martin. You know, definitely not a fan of doing that. But hey, maybe it's legit, and maybe he's actually a good starter. The Koumissi retirement really threw a wrench in our plans because I think our plans were to start Koumissi and kind of ease McMillan into it, but it's going to be sink or swim for him. So, and then the third one that I just threw in was guard. I'm not as worried about guard as, frankly, I probably should be. We haven't had a good guard since Richie Incognito, but, you know, we have a lot of veteran depth, whether it's Craig Erbrick and Ted Larson. Ted Larson tore his biceps, no big deal or anything. That happened like the same day Tannehill happened, so it kind of got overshadowed. But he'll be back, you know, in 5 weeks or so, which is fine. So I guess guard would be the third one. But it all comes down to Cutler. Scary stuff, guys.
Man, and we got a Jonathan Martin. Memories. For the Chiefs, you know, it's sort of a weird training camp here for the Chiefs because while Pod refuses to believe me on this, the Chiefs are about as deep as they've ever been, and it's kind of a weird year because every person they drafted at every single round of the draft, they're all guys that it's clear were sort of project players that they're planning on, you know, working in maybe next year. And a lot of these guys are probably not going to make the roster. I mean, the Chiefs are just so stacked at some of these positions. And you never want to see a team, you know, give up on a draft pick, you know, before they've even put in a full year into the system. But I think the Chiefs are going to end up doing that in this position because they just have so many guys that that have shown out already. Obviously, Chiefs fans are going to be most excited to see Mahomes on the field and what he's going to be doing. I mean, honestly, I mean, I also know that there's nothing he's going to show that's going to change my mind about where he is or really, you know, mean much because he's still on the depth chart as the number three quarterback, which means he's going to be playing the second half this week, and he's just going to be probably burning the house down on a bunch of fourth stringers and guys who are about to be cut off of other teams. So, that's not really going to mean much to me. I mean, if he throws 10 interceptions, but even then, probably doesn't really matter. It's the first preseason game of his, you know, his NFL career, and we know we're not going to ever put him on a field till next year. But really, the most interesting battle in camp has not been within a position, but it's really been just about the Chiefs. They've basically named Tyreek Hill on the depth charts as their number one receiver right now, which is really fascinating. He worked his way up from being a fifth-round pick last year. They're planning on basically using as a kick returner to suddenly showing that he had great ball skills, like, and real potential as a receiver in training camp. By halfway through the season, he was the Chiefs' number one dynamic weapon. And the second half of the season, I mean, they're running seemingly half of their offense through him. And now, you know, they cut Jeremy Maclin in large part. I mean, not only due to his contract, but due to the fact that basically they viewed Tyreek Hill is being the number one wide receiver option. Travis Kelce's probably going to get the most receptions and most targets overall. And so, you know, basically Tyreek Hill displaced him, and he's now running with the ones and in the number one spot, which means in training camp, he's lining up against Marcus Peters on almost every play. And that apparently has been, you know, this much watch camp reporting and the most entertaining thing out there in St. Joe so far. And Tyreek Hill, granted, you know, training camp sort of favors the offense a little bit, but Tyreek has been getting the better of Peters more often than not. So I'm fascinated to see his development as a pure wide receiver. He's not in any of the special teams drills at all anymore. And so that's the one thing. I mean, I don't know how many snaps he's going to get, but that's going to be the fun thing, I think, for Chiefs fans to really give a look to this preseason that actually, you know, matters for 2017. Also, Kareem Hunt, we'll see what he can do. But he's also still, I mean, he's still a third string. So he's going to be making some soon-to-be unemployed, undrafted free agents look bad in the fourth quarter. So I'm not too super excited about that. I mean, I definitely want to see the guy play too much in week one. But we have already gone over an hour. We've had some really great discussion here, as always. Always plenty of debate around the NFL. And so definitely listen in. We're going to have even more fun action on Thursday, as usual, with Pod Vader and some other super fans looking at the latest news, the latest craziness, and some of these preseason matchups and some things to watch there coming up. You can definitely catch all of our back episodes, including our division previews. We have all of our super fans join in. The thing that we do best is we have a representative of every team in the NFL, and we break down each team from a fan perspective. And so we went through all of those divisions. And they are still up there. You can find them all on blogtalkradio.com/nextfanup. But an even better place to find them is on iTunes. And while you're on iTunes, go ahead and give us a review. We love getting any ratings or reviews. And if you leave us a few notes, positive or negative, we'll probably read them on the air. We also will take feedback at our email address, which is nextfanup@gmail.com. We're also going to be putting up a lot of content on our Facebook page coming up, and that is facebook.com/nextfanup. And each of our super fans, hopefully, will be putting up a game preview for their upcoming preseason matchup, including all of the things we've sort of been talking about so far, which is the things to watch. So if you want to hear what your designated super fan is looking for in your team, that's the place to find it. I don't know what else to do for you, because we have plenty for you. But for Andy, Greg, and Nick, it's time for us to toss it to Landry Jones.
Next week will be next week. Today I'm going to enjoy it. I'm going to go back home and hang out.